The 2016 offseason begins in earnest on Monday as the Green Bay Packers start up workouts. What are the main storylines? We'll ask Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the offseason program getting started. And to do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today.
You.
We have Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Mr. Cohen, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Very good. We're glad you could join us on the show. And Michael, as the Packers offseason program starts on Monday, we've all seen the pictures of Eddie Lacy over the past few months on social media, what have you. But I think people are waiting to know what he weighs, what he weighs when he tips the scales. When do you think we're going to get that information?
Well, we've had that information for years, and obviously it hasn't been accurate. You know, I think he was listed at 234 pounds the last few seasons. And so, and that's not anything specific to Eddie Lacy. You know, the heights and weights that are offered in media guides across the NFL and across college sports, across all leagues, really, are notorious for being fairly inaccurate. Some guys will add 2 inches to their height. Some guys will take away or add weight, depending on, you know, what they want to convey. To the outside. So we are going to see a number, in the media guide that comes out eventually with a spring roster. And for all we know, they might keep it the same. They might keep it at that 234 since that's what it had been the last couple seasons. So I don't know if we'll ever actually know exactly what he weighs unless he decides to offer it up. And in the past, he has not wanted to do that when asked by reporters.
It'll be interesting to see if he changes his tune this year or not, knowing the attention on the situation. But Michael, what aside from Eddie Lacy, then, what is the biggest non-Eddie Lacy storyline heading into the team's offseason program?
I think the biggest storyline has to be Jordy Nelson's knee. You know, this was a major reason that led to a lot of the struggles we saw last season. It was a big reason why the offense couldn't really get going, why Randall Cobb kind of struggled to get going a little bit. So I think the status of Jordy Nelson's knee is what everyone's going to be wondering about. We've heard for weeks and months that he's way ahead of schedule in his rehab, but we want to know what that really means. And, we'd like to be able to see him. We don't know if he's going to be participating, not participating. So what his status is and any potential timeline as it relates to football involvement, I think is going to be really interesting for people.
You know, it's not huge news, but perhaps the most recent thing emerging from Packers headquarters was the signing of safety Chris Banjo. In the report just yesterday by your colleague Tom Silverstein, Packers reportedly signing offensive lineman Don Barclay. Did the timing of these signings mean anything just days before the offseason program starts?
Yeah, you have to be under contract in order to be able to take part in the off-season program. So when Chris Banjo signs his exclusive rights contract, when Don Barclay reportedly signs his new contract, those guys are then able to be at the facility today, participate in all the workouts and everything like that. So that's why those things got done in the last, 48 or 72 hours, whatever the case may be, just so those guys could be back working out with the rest of the team.
We're talking to Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel here at Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Michael, I wanted to get your reaction to a few things from the Packers schedule release last week, starting with, do you think it will be a mental grind essentially playing 3 season openers for the Packers? Week 1 at Jacksonville, week 2 to open at Minnesota's new stadium, and then week 3 the Packers for their own home opener. Will that be a grind for them?
I think it might be a little bit different simply because the emotional toll that those three games would take is probably going to be a little bit different than it would when you just consider three regular games or one traditional season opener and then two normal regular season games. So I think there will be heightened pressure. I think there will be a need for the Packers to really raise their intensity level to match some of those environments that they're going to be in. You know, Jacksonville and Minnesota, obviously, running on full steam to get started with their seasons. And then, of course, the fans are going to be looking for an inspired and energetic performance the first time they take the field at Lambeau. So I do think there will be a heightened emotional component to the start of the season than there might be in traditional years.
Have you ever heard of a team playing four straight home games? I know, albeit with a bye in between. And is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Packers?
Well, I don't know if I've seen it at the NFL level, but we see it all the time in college. Programs like Alabama, Ohio State, Florida, Florida State, a lot of those teams can go four or five, and I've seen as many as six games to start a season before they play a true road game. Almost all of them have at least four games at home. So, the number of players on this team that have experienced four straight home games at some point in their career is probably higher than you would think. But at the NFL level, it's obviously unusual. So I think that it's going to be a challenge, to navigate a schedule that does have a couple lengthy road trips when you consider the parlay of the end of the exhibition season into the regular season, and then obviously that three-game stretch in the middle where they're on the road. But the four home games in a row, it could be a defining stretch for this season because when you look at the opportunity to play four games at home, and the Packers believe that they should win every game they play at home, regardless of the opponent. You're looking at a chance to win 25% of your games and basically get yourself about two-thirds of the way to the playoffs, or maybe even one-third of the way to the playoffs, I guess, depending on how things shake out in one month. And so that is an enormous opportunity for the Packers that I think they're going to be eager to take on, because if they can notch four straight games in a row, that's a boost to any team at any point in the year.
The Packers have the week four bye, and then they get the so-called mini bye, after the week seven game against Chicago on a Thursday. Do you think that can have an effect down the stretch with their breaks coming so early in the season and then having to play week after week for quite a long time late in the year?
Yeah, any extra days of rest you can get are certainly going to be beneficial. And even if it's a small period of time as 48 hours or 72 hours or even 24 hours, honestly, with the amount of treatment that these guys get and the progress that they can make on a day-to-day basis, if you can get any extra time, it is extremely beneficial. And, these guys are getting round-the-clock treatment. And sometimes in that case, we mean literally around the clock. There are guys who have the ability to take home a stim machine or to take home, certain suits that they wear on their legs and things like that for, regeneration of muscles and things like that. So these guys can actually get around the clock treatment. And when you add in an extra day, 2 days, 3 days to that, it can make a significant difference. So I think that will definitely be something the Packers look to use to their advantage for anybody and everybody that might be in the training room at that point of the year.
How much of a disadvantage is the three straight road games in November then?
Well, I mean, it's certainly difficult. I think that I think the silver lining in all of that is that the opponents that they're playing in that particular stretch are not necessarily world beaters. You go to the Titans, a team that obviously proved it can be dangerous with Marcus Mariota putting up some monster numbers at times last year. But then you go to the Redskins and to the Eagles. And so you would think that in all three of those games, the Packers might be favored regardless of who they're playing. So it's certainly a difficult stretch, but it's not as if they have to go, to the Falcons, to the Colts, and to the Vikings all in a row or anything like that, which would be probably three of the toughest teams on their schedule. So three games on the road, not ideal, but the three opponents they were given for those games was a little bit of a break.
Do you like or dislike the three straight division games to end the season all within the NFC North?
You can definitely argue it both ways, but I kind of look at it as a player, as an opportunity that would be exciting to me. And the reason I say that is because the Packers on paper have a very solid team. So the chances of them being in a situation where they are only around 500 going into the last three games is probably pretty slim. Chances are they're going to be in a decent position to make the playoffs. And honestly, depending on how the season goes, they could already have made the playoffs at that point, whether it's through the division or the wild card. But the one thing that I think would excite me as a player is knowing that my final three games of the season are essentially leaving, you know, a chance to reach the playoffs in my own hands. In other words, if I'm a player and I go out and I win those three games, then I know that winning three division games at the end of a season, unless I completely bombed, you know, the first two thirds of the year, that's more than likely going to get me into the playoffs if I finish strong. So I think that it's sort of in some ways viewed as, okay, whatever happened until this, let's just go out and win our last three games, and it's probably going to put us in the playoffs. So I think it can work both ways, but I think it can certainly be embraced as a positive thing.
Before we let you go here, Michael, if you had to guess the Packers' first-round draft pick right now, who would you guess it would be?
You know, it's too hard to name an individual player, but I will offer a position group. I think that I think it's going to be a defensive lineman. I think there's so much depth in this defensive line, especially defensive line class, I should say, especially in the first round, you know, that I think you can get an extremely good player that can either play inside, you know, as a nose, or can move as a defensive end in sort of like a Mike Daniels role. You know, there are a lot of pass rushers available as well. So I think it is going to be somebody that plays defense. And then I think they start to address offensive tackle and inside linebacker, things like that, in the second and third round. But who knows? But I just think there's too much talent along the defensive line in this draft to not take somebody that good, that high up on the board.
We can't get a name out of you. I'm not going to hold it against you if you don't get it right.
No, I don't want to offer a name at this point yet. I haven't finished all my draft prep. I'm finishing that up today and tomorrow, so I don't have it nailed down yet.
Fair enough, fair enough. Are you going to be at Packers headquarters today with the off-season program starting?
Yeah, I'll be there today, and then Wednesday Ted Thompson speaks, I believe, if I have my days correct, so I'll be back up there for that as well. And should be a nice little bit of news here as we start to get ready for the draft next week.
Sounds good, Michael. Keep up the good work there at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JS Online. We appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us this morning, and thanks a lot.
No problem. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Michael. Take care. Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joining us on Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV here on a Monday morning as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
So in addition to the news that Don Barclay will be signing, that just coming down the pike Sunday, in addition to safety Chris Banjo signing last Friday, it was the last episode of Railbird Central happened Friday morning. News that Banjo signed came Friday afternoon, so really the first time we've gotten a chance to talk about it. But now that we know those guys are going to be signed, they're going to be at 1265 Lombardi Avenue today taking part in workouts. You know, attention is really turning to the unsigned players, and I believe the Packers have five notable ones left who were on the team last year who are still kind of unsigned, and I just kind of wanted to go through those five players ever so briefly here. And, you know, because I think it's you know, really just everybody's unsure what's happening. Are the Packers going to re-sign these guys? Are they not? And kind of go through them one by one here, and we'll start with the biggest question mark of all, and a guy, of course, who's been, you know, a part of this Packers team for a long time and a part of their Super Bowl victory and a multi-time Pro Bowler, that is fullback John Kuhn. This is the biggest puzzle to me because I guessed from the get-go that John Kuhn would be back, but now that he's unsigned at the start of the offseason program, it has me questioning it even more. Because if the Pack, I don't think, you know, I can understand, you know, during the start of free agency, the Packers' priorities were elsewhere, you know, getting deals done with Nick Perry and later Jared Cook and all the players they've re-signed and whatever. And you can wait for later to re-sign John Kuhn. But it's now, you know, it's been, what, a month since free agency has opened, and now you're to the start of the offseason program, and he's still unsigned. I mean, and you know, apparently, you know, from reports from the beat reporters covering the Green Bay Packers, it's just kind of seems up in the air too. I mean, they've talked to his agent and said he hasn't really heard. You know, you would have thought by now he would have heard one way or the other. You know, kind of like they did with James Jones. You know, the Packers at least told James Jones, we're not going to resign you, so he can go out and pursue other options if he wants. And so that's what's puzzling to me, is this kind of, you know, uncertainty regarding John Kuhn here. You know, maybe they want to leave the door open in case Aaron Ripkowski gets injured or something like that. I could understand that if the Packers want to leave the door open. I mean, you think you would kind of tell them that's your plan? I mean, because then, I mean, John Kuhn could be free to pursue other options, maybe sign a, you know, a deal with another team, perhaps, if he wanted to just play one more year and that was really his goal. I'm not sure what's going on there. Not sure if he's going to be back. I still, if forced to guess, I still think John Kuhn's going to play with the Packers, sign with the Packers in 2016. Whether that means he makes the final 53-man roster or not, I'm not sure. It's just a guess on my end. But anyway, moving on. The other players. Mike Neal's another question mark. You know, he's gotten interest from other teams, but they've apparently passed on him. You know, we've talked about Mike Neal before, and I think the, you know, underrated thing with him was his, that name, you know, he was named in that Al Jazeera documentary on doping and players, and they're like, you know, if you go and watch that, and you can find it online, and you know, you may not agree with everything that's said in that documentary, but it's like, you know, the question posed to this, you know, Charlie Sly guy who, you know, who the documentary kind of revolves around, you know, they asked him, like, who's the biggest hardhead in sports and doping and things like that? And the answer was Mike Neal. Is like, it wasn't just like, you know, who's using, you know, there's many athletes using steroids out there, perhaps. Was like, who's the biggest one of all? Like Mike Neal, like really, like just this kind of role player on the Packers roster who's, you know, started for them but hasn't been a Pro Bowler or anything like that. You know, maybe Mike Neal comes back on a minimum contract, and that way they can, you know, cut him if need be, if any of these drug allegations do come true or anything like that. So it's interesting to see how that kind of, you know, maybe is affecting this, impacting this. I don't know what's going to happen with him either. I tend to think the Packers are just going to bypass and allow him to sign somewhere else if he wants. You know, I'm not sure if he's holding out for more money. I tend to think he's not going to get it at this point, other than, you know, maybe slightly over the league minimum. And maybe a modest bonus or something like that. And we're talking very modest at this time. Another guy much in the same boat, tight end Andrew Quarles. I tend to think the Packers are just going to pass on him as well, especially after signing Jared Cook at the position. Not only that, but the Packers already have five tight ends under contract on the roster. You know, a lot of them certainly aren't, you know, guys who are more prospects than anything when we're talking about Kennard Backman, Mitchell Henry, you know, young guys, Justin Perillo, who certainly haven't played as much as Andrew Quarles, but, you know, I mean, at what point do you need a sixth tight end? Or if you are going to add a sixth tight end, maybe it'll be, end up being a rookie from this year's draft class or things like that. So, you know, I could certainly understand that Andrew Quarles would be on speed dial, you know, if the Packers suffered an injury at the position, not unlike, you know, James Jones this past year. But I tend to think, you know, they're going to just kind of wait on him as well, especially, you know, why do it before the NFL draft? Why not at least wait until after that? Because, I don't know, all of a sudden you draft a guy high in the NFL draft on, you know, maybe day two they draft a tight end. Now, certainly, then why would you bring Andrew Quarles back? So I don't see anything happening with him till after the NFL draft at the earliest. That leaves us with long snapper Brett Goode and safety Sean Richardson, both of whom are recovering from injuries. Brett Goode, the timing was so bad for him because he suffered the torn ACL late last season. I think it was the month of December. And, you know, the good thing is, you know, he's been around so long, the Packers don't exactly need him to see him during the offseason program. You know, they could sign him in training camp or whatever and be just fine. So, again, there's no rush with a long snapper like Brett Goode. I think they're just waiting to see how he recovers. And they already have the other long snapper, Rick Lovato, under contract just in case. So the Packers are covered there. It's just not a pressing issue for them. And safety Sean Richardson with the two spinal fusion surgeries, apparently been cleared to practice, but or play. I don't know exactly what the words were, but hard to say what's going to happen there with him, whether a team wants to inherit the risk of him getting injured again. And I tend to think the Packers will pass there as well. So there are your five Packers left on the market and a little bit of analysis on each. Be interesting to see what happens to each of them eventually, whether it's they sign with the Packers, sign somewhere else, or, you know, with them, maybe even retire. We'll stay tuned, whatever happens to these five players. But that kind of leads us into the next segment of the show.
The day ahead.
The day ahead in the world of the Green Bay Packers. This Monday, it's the start of the offseason program. And just to put this in perspective here and lay this out, you know, the offseason program has three phases to it. And the phase one, of course, begins today. And you might remember, it just includes strength and conditioning only for 2 weeks. So while the offseason program is starting today, the Packers aren't out there practicing today. You know, they're not putting on helmets and pads. They're not doing 11-on-11. They ease into things in Green Bay and everywhere across the NFL. This is in the collective bargaining agreement that the Players Association has agreed to. And it is voluntary, by the way. No player can be forced to take part in this. Certainly most of them, 99, maybe a little under 99, we're talking 98-99% of players do take part in it. And you know, it's simply strength and conditioning in that they're lifting weights, they're running, things like that. They're stretching, they're, you know, all sorts of those kind of things just to get back into playing shape and get their bodies ready, more or less. That's what they're doing this week. That's what they're doing next week. And that's, like, almost it. I've actually seen, you know, like, you know, they ask, like, in terms of quarterbacks, can they throw? You know, I mean, because, I mean, that's part of getting back into shape if you're a quarterback as well, throwing the football. They can, and they can throw to receivers, but the receivers aren't covered during these 2 weeks or whatever. Even beyond that, in phase two, they're not covered. You know, there's no, you know, offense receiver versus cornerback or anything like that. It's just for this small amount of time, getting their bodies back into playing shape. And then a few weeks down the road, they start, you know, phase two, phase three, start getting into a few more things. Little by little starts, you know, stacking the blocks and adding more things and putting on the helmets and doing 11-on-11s eventually, but not right now. So it's kind of the time period when the Packers strength and conditioning staff is like, they're under the microscope, I guess, or, you know, they're kind of, this is, you know, maybe one of the biggest times of year when they get the most attention. So, you know, with the Packers head strength and conditioning coach, Mark Lovat, he's assisted by Chris Gizzi, Thaddeus Jackson, Grant Thorne. These kind of guys, this is their time of year when they're kind of like the only coaches really working with the players here. You know, Mike McCarthy and his staff, they're not really doing much, you know, right now in terms of, you know, coaching the players. It's more strength and conditioning just for 2 weeks here until, like I said, they ramp things up and, kind of maybe one last thing here. This is also the time of year when you start hearing about workout bonuses. Because I mentioned before, this, workouts here are voluntary for players. The only thing that is mandatory, the only thing that players can absolutely have to attend is mini camp. And that for most teams happens in the month of May or June. So still a little bit away yet. That's the only thing, if they didn't attend that, they could be fine. But apart from that, like right now, if a player wasn't there, Packers really can't do anything. But you'll hear this, though, which is interesting, is every year the Packers have like one of the highest workout bonuses in the entire league, in which, I think is really a smart move for the Green Bay Packers when, I know Andrew Brandt used to talk about this a lot. There's so oftentimes, bonuses, there's different bonuses in the NFL, and a signing bonus, literally, you get that money for signing your contract. That's all you got to do. You sign the contract, you get the money. There's not a whole lot involved there. At least with a workout bonus, you're making these guys work out in order to earn the bonus. They couldn't, if they don't take part in the program, if they decide not to come to Green Bay, well, then they don't get the money. And I think that's what's incentivized, the 99% of players to come to Green Bay, to earn this money. So, I mean, a lot of times it's veterans who, get these workout bonuses in their contracts. It's not always the young players, the rookies. I mean, their incentive, they have incentive anyway. If they just want to be there and have a job, they got to be there anyway. So they have the incentive. It's for the veterans where they give these workout bonuses, to be there in the off season and working. And, it's another thing for such a long time. There was, this stigma attached to Green Bay that, free agents never wanted to come because it's Green Bay. It's, it's rural for one, it's cold for another. And in order to kind of overcome that, this was one way to, get guys coming to Green Bay, is give them this incentive to do it, pay them to do it, essentially work out here in the off season. And, it's the off-season program. There's not a lot of pressure at this time of year. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's an absolutely great thing for the Packers to lead the league in this category of workout bonuses. So you'll hear about that today and during this time period, during phase one, where the Packers are simply kind of lifting weights, running, those kind of things, and that pretty much does it. And that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. In fact, thank you everybody so much for joining us. Thank you to Michael Cohen of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for joining us today, talking a little bit about Packers football here as the offseason program begins today on Monday in Green Bay in Titletown, and setting the wheels in motion for the season ahead, the 2016 season. We're taking baby steps toward it today. This is the first step in several along the way, in which we get closer and closer to football all the time. And so make sure to join us Wednesday for our next episode of Railbird Central. Shows happen every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. The live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, we ask that you please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So, if you listen to the show, do us a solid and give us a rating and review. It doesn't have to be anything long. You don't have to write a novel. Just go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. And rating and review, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot, folks. Have a good Monday. Have a good week. And we will see you later next week then. I leave you today with a song, "The Place That I Call Home" by the infamous String Dusters on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go, Pack. Go.